While Alma brushed her teeth, I prepared the convertible sofa for her. Soon she was curled up under a blanket, sound asleep. But I remained awake, propped up in a chair with the desk light on, looking at the stillness of her face, listening to the rhythm of her breathing, trying to make some sense out of all that she had said. I felt as if my world had been turned on its head, as if I had woken up to find a blue sun in a yellow sky, or heard animals speaking like men. All my life I had carried a single image of my father, one that I had sometimes rebelled against but had never questioned, one that I had later tried to take as my own. The brilliant scholar, the generous friend, the upstanding leader, my father had been all those things. Now, as I sat in the glow of a single light bulb, rocking slightly on a hardback chair, that image had suddenly vanished. Replaced by what? A bitter drunk? A defeated, lonely bureaucrat? To think that all my life I had been wrestling with nothing more than a ghost. For a moment I felt giddy. If Alma hadn't been in the room, I probably would have laughed out loud. The king is overthrown, I thought. The emerald curtain is pulled aside. The rabble in my head is free to run riot. I can do whatever I damn well please. For what man, if not my own father, has the power to tell me otherwise? Whatever I do, it seems, I won't do much worse than he did. As the night wore on, I tried to regain my balance, sensing that there was little satisfaction to be had from my newfound liberation. The fantasy of my father had at least kept me from despair. Now he was dead. Truly. He could no longer tell me how to live. All he could tell me, perhaps, was what had happened to him. It occurred to me that for all the new information, I still didn't know the man my father had been. What had happened to all his vigor, his promise? What had shaped his ambitions? I imagined once again the first and only time we'd met. The man I now knew must have been as apprehensive as I was. The man who had returned to Hawaii to sift through his past and perhaps try and reclaim that best part of him, that part that had been misplaced. He hadn't been able to tell me his true feelings then, any more than I had been able to express my 10-year-old desires. We had been frozen by the sight of the other, unable to escape the suspicion that under examination, our true selves would be found wanting. Now, 15 years later, I looked into Alma's sleeping face and saw the price we had paid for that silence. 10 days later, Alma and I sat in the hard plastic seats of an airport terminal, looking out at the planes through a high wall of glass. I asked her what she was thinking about, and she smiled softly. "I was thinking about Alego," she said. "Home square. Our grandfather's land. Where Granny still lives. It's the most beautiful place, Barak. When I'm in Germany, and it's cold outside, and I'm feeling lonely, I sometimes close my eyes and imagine I'm there, sitting in the compound, surrounded by big trees that our grandfather planted. Granny is talking, telling me something funny, and I can hear the cow swishing its tail behind us, and the chickens pecking at the edges of the field, and the smell of the fire from the cooking hut. And under the mango tree, near the cornfields, is the place where the old man is buried." Alma's flight was starting to board. We remained seated, and Alma closed her eyes, squeezing my hand. "We need to go home," she said. "We need to go home, Barak, and see him there."